19.
If only I had passed over Alendi when looking for an assistant all those years ago.
Sazed unclasped his final steel mind. He held it up, the bracelet-like band of metal glistening in the red sunlight. To another man it might seem valuable. To Sazed it was now just another empty husk. A simple steel bracelet. He could refill it if he wished, but for the moment he didn't consider the weight worth carrying. With a sigh, he dropped the bracelet. It fell with a clank, tossing up a puff of ash from the ground.
5 months of storing, of spending every fifth day drained of speed, my body moving as if impeded by a thick molasses. And now it's all gone.
The loss had purchased something valuable, however. In just 6 days of travel, using steel mines on occasion, he had traveled the equivalent of 6 weeks' worth of walking. According to his cartography copper mind, Luthadel was now a little over a week away. Sazed felt good about the expenditure. Perhaps he'd overreacted to the deaths he'd found in the little southern village. Perhaps there was no need for him to hurry. But he'd created the steel mind to be used. He hefted his pack, which was much lighter than it had been. Though many of his metal mines were small, they were heavy in aggregate. He'd decided to discard some of the less valuable or less full ones as he ran. Just like the steel bracelet, which he left sitting in the ash behind him as he went on. He was definitely in the central dominance now. He'd passed Fal East and Tirion, two of the northern ash mounds. Tirion was still just barely visible to the south, a tall solitary peak with a cut-off, blackened top. The landscape had grown flat, the trees changing from patchy brown pines to the willowy white aspens common around Luthadel. The aspens rose like bones, growing from the black soil, clumping, their ashen white bark scarred and twisted. They... Sazed paused. He stood near the central canal, one of the main routes to Luthadel. The canal was empty of boats at the moment. Travelers were rare these days, even more rare than they had been during the Final Empire, for bandits were far more common. Sazed had outrun several groups of them during his hurried flight to Luthadel. No, solitary travelers were rare. Armies were far more common, and, judging from the several dozen trails of smoke he saw rising ahead of him, he had run afoul of one. It stood directly between him and Luthadel. He thought quietly for a moment, flakes of ash beginning to fall lightly around him. It was midday. If that army had scouts, Sazed would have a very difficult time getting around it. In addition, his steel mines were empty. He wouldn't be able to run from pursuit. And yet, an army within a week of Luthadel? Whose was it? And what threat did it pose? His curiosity, the curiosity of a scholar, prodded him to seek a vantage from which to study the troops. Vin and the others could use any information he gathered. Decision made, Sazed located a hill with a particularly large stand of aspens. He felt the familiar sensation of decreased weight, and he easily climbed to the top of the thin tree. His body was now light enough that it didn't take much strength to pull himself upward. Hanging from the very tip of the tree, Sazed tapped his tin mind. The edges of his vision fuzzed, as always, but with the increased vision, he could make out details about the large group settled into a hollow before him. He was right about it being an army. He was wrong about it being made up of men.
"By the forgotten gods," Sazed whispered,
so shocked that he nearly lost his grip. The army was organized in only the most simplistic and primitive way. There were no tents, no vehicles, no horses. Just hundreds of large cooking fires, each ringed with figures. And those figures were of a deep blue. They varied greatly in size. Some were just 5 feet tall, others were lumbering hulks of 10 feet or more. They were both the same species, Sazed knew. Kolos. The creatures, though similar to men in base form, never stopped growing. They simply continued to get bigger as they aged, growing until their hearts could no longer support them. Then they died, killed by their body's own growth imperative. Before they died, however, they got very large and very dangerous. Seiza dropped from the tree, making his body light enough that he hit the ground softly. He hurriedly searched through his copper mines. When he found the one he wanted, he strapped it to his upper left arm, then climbed back up the tree. He searched an index quickly. Somewhere he'd taken notes on a book about the Koloss. He'd studied it, trying to decide if the creatures had a religion. He'd had someone repeat the notes back to him so he could store them in the copper mine. He had the book memorized, too, of course, but placing so much information directly in his mind would ruin the... There, he thought, recovering the notes. He tapped them from the copper mine, filling his mind with knowledge. Most Koloss bodies gave out before they reached 20 years of age. The more ancient creatures were often a massive 12 feet in height, with stocky, powerful bodies. However, few Koloss lived that long, and not just because of heart failure. Their society, if it could be called that, was extremely violent. Excitement suddenly overcoming apprehension, Seizid tapped tin for vision again, searching through the thousands of blue humanoids, trying to get visual proof of what he'd read. It wasn't hard to find fights. Scuffles around the fires seemed common, and interestingly, they were always between Koloss of nearly the same size. Seizid magnified his view even further, gripping the tree tightly to overcome the nausea, and got his first good look at a Koloss. It was a creature of smaller size, perhaps 6 feet tall. It was man-shaped, with two arms and legs, though its neck was hard to distinguish. It was completely bald. The oddest feature, however, was its blue skin, which hung loose and folded. The creature looked like a fat man might, had all his fat been drained away, leaving the stretched skin behind. And the skin didn't seem to be connected very well. Around the creature's red blood-drop eyes, the skin sagged, revealing the facial muscles. The same was true around the mouth. The skin sagged a few inches below the chin, the lower teeth and jaw completely exposed. It was a stomach-turning sight, especially for a man who was already nauseated. The creature's ears hung low, flopping down beside its jawline. Its nose was formless and loose, with no cartilage supporting it. Skin hung baggily from the creature's arms and legs, and its only clothing was a crude loincloth. Seizid turned, selecting a larger creature, one perhaps 8 feet tall, to study. The skin on this beast wasn't as loose, but it still didn't seem to fit quite right. Its nose twisted at a crooked angle, pulled flat against the face by an enlarged head that sat on a stumpy neck. The creature turned to leer at a companion, and again the skin around its mouth didn't quite fit. The lips didn't close completely, and the holes around the eyes were too big, so they exposed the muscles beneath.
Like a person wearing a mask made of skin, Seizid thought, trying to push away his disgust. So their body continues to grow, but their skin doesn't?
His thought was confirmed as a massive 10-foot-tall beast of a Koloss wandered into the group. Smaller creatures scattered before this newcomer, who thumped up to the fire, where several horses were roasting. This largest creature's skin was pulled so tight it was beginning to tear. The hairless blue flesh had ripped around the eyes, at the edges of the mouth, and around the massive chest muscles. Seizid could see little trails of red blood dripping from the rips. Even where the skin wasn't torn, it was pulled taut. The nose and ears were so flat they were almost indistinguishable from the flesh around them. Suddenly, Seizid's study didn't seem so academic. Koloss had come to the central dominance. Creatures so violent and uncontrollable that the Lord Ruler had been forced to keep them away from civilization. Seizid extinguished his tin mind, welcoming the return to normal vision. He had to get to Luthadel and warn the others. If they... Seizid froze. One problem with enhancing his vision was that he temporarily lost the ability to see close up. So it wasn't odd that he hadn't noticed the Kolos patrol surrounding his aspens.
By the forgotten gods!
He held firm to the tip of the tree, thinking quickly. Several Kolos were already pushing their way into the stand. If he dropped to the ground, he'd be too slow to escape. As always, he wore a pewter mind. He could easily become as strong as 10 men and maintain it for a good amount of time. He could fight, perhaps. Yet the Kolos carried crude-looking but massive swords. Sazed's notes, his memory, and his lore all agreed. Kolos were very dangerous warriors. Strong as 10 men or not, Sazed wouldn't have the skill to defeat them.
"Come down,"
called a deep, slurred voice from below.
"Come down now."
Sazed looked down. A large Kolos, skin just beginning to stretch, stood at the tree's base. It gave the aspen a shake.
"Come down now,"
the creature repeated.
"The lips don't work very well," Sazed thought. "He sounds like a man trying to talk without moving his lips."
He wasn't surprised that the creature could talk. His notes mentioned that. He was, however, surprised at how calm it sounded.
"I could run," he thought.
He could keep to the tops of trees, perhaps cross the distance between patches of aspens by dropping his metal mines and trying to ride gusts of wind. But it would be very difficult and very unpredictable. And he would have to leave his copper mines, 1,000 years of history, behind. So, pewter mind ready in case he needed strength, Sazed let go of the tree. The Kolos leader, Sazed could only assume that was what he was, watched Sazed fall to the ground with a red-eyed stare. The creature did not blink. Sazed wondered if it even could blink, its skin stretched as it was. Sazed plunked to the ground beside the tree, then reached for his pack.
"No!"
the Kolos snapped, grabbing the pack with an inhumanly quick swipe of the arm. It tossed the pack to another Kolos.
"I need that," Sazed said. "I will be much more cooperative if..."
"Quiet!"
the Kolos yelled with a rage so sudden that Sazed took a step backward. Terrasmen were tall, especially Terrasmen eunuchs, and it was very disconcerting to be dwarfed by this beastly creature, well over 9 feet in height, its skin a blackish blue, its eyes the color of the sun at dusk. It loomed over Sazed, and he cringed in spite of himself. Apparently that was the proper reaction, for the lead Kolos nodded and turned away.
"Come,"
it slurred, lumbering through the small aspen forest. The other Kolos, about 7 of them, followed. Sazed didn't want to find out what would happen if he disobeyed. He chose a god, Duis, a god once said to watch over wearied travelers, and said a quick, silent prayer. Then he hurried forward, staying with the pack of Kolos as they walked toward the camp.
"At least they didn't kill me out of hand," Sazed thought.
He'd half expected that, considering what he'd read. Of course, even the books didn't know much. The Kolos had been kept separate from mankind for centuries. The Lord Ruler only called upon them in times of great martial need, to quell revolts or to conquer new societies discovered on the inner islands. At those times, the Kolos had caused absolute destruction and slaughter, or so the histories claimed.
Could all that have been propaganda? Sazed wondered. Maybe the Kolos aren't as violent as we assumed.
One of the Kolos beside Sazed howled in sudden anger. Sazed spun as the Kolos jumped at one of its companions. The creature ignored the sword on its back, instead punching his enemy's head with a blocky fist. The others paused, turning to watch the fight, but none of them seemed alarmed. Sazed watched with growing horror as the aggressor proceeded to repeatedly pummel his enemy. The defender tried to protect himself, getting out a dagger and managing to score a cut on the aggressor's arm. The blue skin tore, seeping bright red blood as the aggressor got his hands around his opponent's thick head and twisted. There was a snap. The defender stopped moving. The aggressor removed the sword from his victim's back and strapped it on beside his own weapon, then removed a small pouch that was tied beside the sword. After that, he stood, ignoring the wound on his arm, and the group began to walk again.
"Why?" Sazed asked, shocked. "What was that for?"
The wounded Kolos turned around.
"I hated him,"
he said.
"Move!"
the lead Kolos snapped at Sazed. Sazed forced himself to start walking. They left the corpse lying in the road.
"The pouches," he thought, trying to find something to focus on besides the brutality. "They all carry those pouches."
The Kolos kept them tied to their swords. They didn't carry the weapons in sheaths. They were simply bound on their backs with leather straps. And tied to those straps were pouches. Sometimes there was just one, though the two largest creatures in the group each had several.
"They look like coin pouches," Sazed thought. "But the Kolos don't have an economy. Perhaps they keep personal possessions in them? But what would beasts like these value?"
They entered the camp. There didn't appear to be sentries at the borders, but then why would guards be necessary? It would be very difficult for a human to sneak into this camp. A group of smaller Kolos, the 5-foot-tall ones, rushed forward as soon as the group arrived. The murderer threw his extra sword to one of them, then pointed into the distance. He kept the pouch for himself, and the small ones rushed off, following the road in the direction of the body.
"Burial detail?" Sazed wondered.
He walked uncomfortably behind his captors as they penetrated into the camp. Beasts of all sorts were being roasted over the fire pits, though Sazed didn't think any of them had once been human. In addition, the ground around the camp had been completely stripped of plant life, as if it had been grazed by a group of particularly aggressive goats. And, according to his copper mind, that wasn't far off the truth. Kolos could apparently subsist on practically anything. They preferred meat, but would eat any kind of plant, even grass, going so far as to pull it up by the roots to eat. Some reports even spoke of them eating dirt and ash, though Sazed found that a little difficult to believe. He continued to walk. The camp smelled of smoke, grime, and a strange musk that he assumed was Kolos body odor. Some of the creatures turned as he passed, watching him with steady red eyes.
"It's like they only have two emotions," he thought,
jumping as a fireside Kolos suddenly screamed and attacked a companion.
"They're either indifferent, or they're enraged."
What would it take to set them all off at once? And what kind of a disaster would they cause if that happened? He nervously revised his earlier thoughts. No, the Kolos had not been maligned. The stories he had heard, stories of Kolos running wild in the Farmost Dominance, causing widespread destruction and death, were obviously true. But something kept this group marginally reined in. The Lord Ruler had been able to control the Kolos, though no book explained how. Most writers simply accepted this ability as part of what had made the Lord Ruler God. The man had been immortal. Compared with that, other powers seemed mundane.
"His immortality, however, was a trick," Sazed thought. "Simply a clever combination of ferrochemical and allomantic powers."
The Lord Ruler had just been a normal man, albeit one with an unusual combination of abilities and opportunities. That being the case, how had he controlled the Kolos?
"There was something different about the Lord Ruler, something more than his powers. He did something at the Well of Ascension, something that forever changed the world. Perhaps his ability to control the Kolos came from that."
Sazed's captors ignored the occasional fights around fire pits. There didn't appear to be any female Kolos in the camp, or if there were, they were indistinguishable from the males. Sazed did, however, notice a Kolos corpse lying forgotten near one of the fires. It had been flayed, the blue skin ripped free.
How could any society exist like this? He thought with horror. His books said the Koloss bred and aged quickly. A fortunate situation for them, considering the number of deaths he had already seen. Even so, it seemed to him that this species killed too many of its members to continue. Yet they did continue. Unfortunately. The keeper in him believed strongly that nothing should be lost, that every society was worth remembering. However, the brutality of the Koloss camp, the wounded creatures who sat ignoring the gashes in their skin, the flayed corpses along the path, the sudden bellows of anger and subsequent murders, tested this belief. His captors led him around a small hillock in the land, and Sazed paused as he saw something very unexpected. A tent.
Go,
the lead Koloss said, pointing. Sazed frowned. There were several dozen humans outside the tent, carrying spears and dressed like imperial guards. The tent was large, and behind it stood a line of boxy carts.
Go!
The Koloss yelled. Sazed did as he was told. Behind him, one of the Koloss indifferently tossed Sazed's pack toward the human guards. The metal mines inside clinked together as they hit the ashy ground, causing Sazed to cringe. The soldiers watched the Koloss retreat with a wary eye. Then one picked up the pack. Another leveled his spear at Sazed. Sazed held up his hands.
I am Sazed, a keeper of Terrace, once steward, now teacher. I am not your enemy.
Yes, well, the guard said, still watching the retreating Koloss. You're still going to have to come with me.
May I have my possessions back? Sazed asked.
This hollow appeared free of Koloss. Apparently the human soldiers wanted to keep their distance. The first guard turned to his companion, who was perusing Sazed's pack. The second guard looked up and shrugged.
No weapons. Some bracelets and rings may be worth something.
None of them are of precious metals, Sazed said. They are the tools of a keeper, and are of little value to anyone but myself.
The second guard shrugged, handing the bag to the first man. Both were of standard central dominance coloring, dark hair, light skin, the build and height of those who'd had proper nutrition as children. The first guard was the older of the two, and was obviously in charge. He took the bag from his companion.
We'll see what His Majesty says.
Ah, Sazed thought. Let us speak with him, then.
The guard turned, pushing aside the tent door and motioning for Sazed to enter. Sazed stepped from red sunlight into a functional, if sparsely furnished, tent room. This main chamber was large and contained several more guards. Sazed had seen perhaps 24 so far. The lead guard walked forward and poked his head into a room at the back. A few moments later, he waved Sazed forward and pulled back the tent door. Sazed entered the second chamber. The man inside wore the pants and suit jacket of a Luthadel nobleman. He was balding, his hair reduced to a few struggling wisps, despite his youth. He stood, tapping the side of his leg with a nervous hand, and jumped slightly when Sazed entered. Sazed recognized the man.
Justice Lekal.
King Lekal, Justice snapped. Do I know you, Terraceman?
We have not met, Your Majesty, Sazed said. But I have had some dealings with a friend of yours, I think. King Elland Venture of Luthadel.
Jastis nodded absently.
My men say the Koloss brought you. They found you poking around the camp?
Yes, Your Majesty, Sazed
said carefully, watching as Jastis began to pace.
This man isn't much more stable than the army he apparently leads, he thought with dissatisfaction. How is it that you have persuaded the creatures to serve you?
You are a prisoner, Terraceman, Jastis snapped. No questions. Did Ellen send you to spy on me?
I was sent by no man, Sazed said. You happened to be in my path, Your Majesty. I meant no harm by my observations.
Jastis paused,
eyeing Sazed before beginning to pace again.
Well, never mind. I've been without a proper steward for some time now. You will serve me now.
I apologize, Your Majesty, Sazed said, bowing slightly. But that will not be possible.
Jastis frowned.
You're a steward. I can tell that from the robes. Is Elend so great a master that you would deny me?
Elend Venture is not my master, Your Majesty, Sazed said, meeting the young king's eyes. Now that we are free, the Terrasmen no longer call any man master. I cannot be your servant, for I can be no man's servant. Keep me as prisoner if you must, but I will not serve you. I apologize.
Jastis paused again. Instead of being angry, however, he simply seemed embarrassed.
I see.
Your Majesty, Sazed said calmly, I realize that you commanded me to ask no questions, so I will instead make observations. You appear to have placed yourself in a very poor position. I know not how you control these Koloss, but I cannot help but think that your grip is tenuous. You are in danger, and you appear intent on sharing that danger with others.
Jastis flushed.
Your observations are flawed, Terrasman. I am in control of this army. They obey me completely. How many other noblemen have you seen gather Koloss armies? None. Only I have been successful.
They do not seem very much under control, Your Majesty.
Oh, Jastis asked. And did they tear you apart when they found you? Pummel you to death for sport? Ram a stick through you and roast you over one of their fires? No. They don't do these things because I commanded them otherwise. It may not seem like much, Terrasman, but they trust me. This is a sign of great restraint and obedience for Koloss.
Civilization is no great achievement, Your Majesty.
Do not try me, Terrasman,
Jastis snapped, running a hand through the remnants of his hair.
These are Koloss we speak of. We can't expect much from them.
And you bring them to Luthadel? Sazed asked. Even the Lord Ruler feared these creatures, Your Majesty. He kept them away from cities. You bring them to the most populated area in all of the Final Empire.
You don't understand, Jastis said. I tried overtures of peace, but nobody listens unless you have money or an army. Well, I have one, and I'll soon have the other. I know Ellen's sitting on that stash of Atium, and I'm just come to make an alliance with him.
An alliance where you take control of the city?
Bah, Jastis said with a wave of his hand. Ellen doesn't control Luthadel. He's just a placeholder waiting for someone more powerful to come along. He's a good man, but he's an innocent idealist. He's going to lose his throne to one army or another, and I'll give him a better deal than Set or Straff will, that's certain.
Set? Straff? What kind of trouble has young Venture gotten himself into?
Sazed shook his head.
Somehow I doubt that a better deal involves the use of Koloss, Your Majesty.
Jastis frowned.
You certainly are smart-mouthed, Terrasman. You're a sign, your entire people are a sign of what has gone wrong with the world. I used to respect the Terrace people. There's no shame in being a good servant.
There's often little pride in it either, Sazed said. But I apologize for my attitude, Your Majesty. It is not a manifestation of Terrace independence. I have always been too free with my comments, I think. I never made the best of stewards.
Or the best of keepers, he added to himself.
Bah!
Jastis said again, resuming his pacing.
Your Majesty, Sazed said, I must continue to Luthadel. There are events I need to deal with. Think what you will of my people, but you must know that we are honest. The work I do is beyond politics and wars, thrones and armies. It is important for all men.
Scholars always say things like that, Jastis said.
He paused.
Elend always said things like that.
Regardless, Sazed continued, I must be allowed to leave. In exchange for my freedom, I will deliver a message from you to His Majesty King Elend, if you wish.
I could send a messenger of my own at any time.
And leave yourself with one less man to protect you from the Koloss, Sazed said.
Jastis paused just briefly.
Ah, so he does fear them. Good. At least he's not insane. I will be leaving, Your Majesty, Sazed said. I do not mean to be arrogant, but I can see that you don't have the resources to keep prisoners. You can let me go, or you can give me to the Koloss. I would be wary, however, of letting them get into a habit of killing humans.
Jastis eyed him.
Fine, he said. Deliver this message, then. Tell Elend that I don't care if he knows I'm coming. I don't even care if you give our numbers. Be sure you're accurate, though. I have over 20,000 Koloss in this army. He can't fight me. He can't fight the others, either. But if I had those city walls, well, I could hold off both other armies for him. Tell him to be logical. If he gives over the Atium, I'll even let him keep Luthadel. We can be neighbors. Allies.
One bankrupt of coin, the other bankrupt of common sense, Sazed thought. Very well, Your Majesty. I will speak with Elend. I will need the return of my possessions, however.
The king waved a hand in annoyance, and Sazed withdrew, waiting quietly as the lead guard entered the king's chambers again and received his orders. As he waited for the soldiers to prepare, his pack thankfully returned to him, Sazed thought about what Jastis had said.
Set or Straff?
Just how many forces were working on Elend to take his city? If Sazed had wanted a quiet place to study, he'd apparently chosen the wrong direction to run.